Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm thrilled to be with all of you today. I have a great show planned. My guest will be Robin Raven. She's the author of a really great new book, Santa's First Vegan Christmas, and I'm really excited to have her on before Christmas so that if you are still in need of a last-minute gift, you might be able to get this for your little one. But anyway, I'll be introducing her just in a little bit, but first I want to share with you some things going on in and around the city, some things in the news that you might be interested in, etc. First, I want to share with you that this past Tuesday was my event where I fed about 600 people in Rufus King Park, a Christmas holiday meal, along with, we collected over 600 coats and toys, and Santa was there handing out gifts. It was really quite a spectacular event, and I want to thank everybody who came out and participated and helped us make the event happen. It's always wonderful to bring community together to take care of our fellow neighbors. You know, there's communities right next to other communities, some with lots of resources and some without. And we really just need to work on leveling the playing field. And the more that those that have can give back, it's a win-win situation all the way around. So again, thank you to everybody, and look out for the next time I'm doing something, probably around Easter. And I want to wish everybody a happy and healthy holiday season. Christmas and Hanukkah is both coming up this weekend, and as well as Kwanzaa and I don't know what other holidays, but during these dark times of winter, it is just so nice to have something to celebrate and to bring some light into all of our lives. And that's what it's about. It's, you know, gift giving is nice, but it's not so much about that as it is about surrounding ourselves with love and light and people that we care about. So I'm wishing everybody a really happy and healthy one. Okay, some of the things going on around the city. January 6th, there's a chili non carne slow food cook-off that's going to be taking place at Jimmy's number 43. And Jimmy's, if you don't know it, is a great local restaurant bar that hosts many of our slow food events. And this is a vegetarian chili cook-off. And it will be supporting Urban Harvest, which is an organization that has a food education program for New York City children during the summer. And they teach them about growing vegetables on an urban farm in East New York. And they also have farms at, I think, 16 schools around the city. So they're a wonderful organization. They need our support. January 6th actually is the deadline to enter into the contest, and the contest is actually on the 29th, January 29th at Jimmy's 43. So information is on my website, as well as for everything I'm going to be talking about right now at iegreen.com. I list all these events, as well as I send out a weekly newsletter saying who my guest will be. So if you don't get that weekly newsletter, you can sign up for that on my website as well. People are always asking us about beekeeping. We keep three hives here on the IE Green Homestead. And the way we got started is by taking a beekeeping class in Brooklyn. And there's one coming up that I want to share with you at January 18th. They're also having one later in the season. But it's really great to do one early in the winter because you need time to figure out what you need to order. You need time to order a bee colony to get started. And so this is a great time, January 18th, and it's at Brooklyn Grange, which is also a wonderful rooftop farm in Brooklyn. And if you haven't been there, it will be a real treat. Of course, it is the winter, but you still might be able to get a tour. I'm not sure. See where they grow the vegetables during the year. But that's January 18th from 6:30 to 8:30. The cost is $45. You can go right to Brooklyn Grange website or online to find out more information. Food Tank, which is a wonderful, wonderful organization, they're having a free webinar on January 18th with a guest speaker, Flo Reed, who is the president and founder of Sustainable Harvest International. And Food Tank is also having their annual event in Washington, D.C., which is a one-day event on February 2nd. And I've gone to the last couple, and they're really wonderful. They're from 9 to 5 all day long. And they have dozens of speakers, and it's a really wonderful networking opportunity with farmers, chefs, policymakers, and lots of government officials are there as well. So it's a wonderful opportunity. It's at George Washington University. So Food Tank is definitely an organization you actually want to sign up with because they send out great emails sharing books and organizations and lots of things to stay on top of. So check out Food Tank if you don't already know about them. January 20th to the 22nd is NOFA New York's annual winter conference. NOFA is the Northeast Organic Farmers Association, and New York chapter is having their annual winter conference January 20th to the 22nd. Unfortunately, it is bad timing because it happens to be the weekend of the Women's March on Washington, which is January 21st. I'm opting to do that instead of the NOFA conference, and I'm sad about it because I love going to the NOFA conference, but the Women's March in Washington needs me and needs everybody. If you can't get to Washington, there are sister marches going on. I know there's one in New York City, too. There's buses leaving from all across the country to head to Washington. You can go to rallybus.org, I think, or Rally Bus Company. There's a link on my website again. Oh, rallycheckpoints/busrides to find out more information about where you can get a bus. But this Women's March is not really just for women. All the men in my life are going as well. It's a march just for us to come together. It's the weekend of the inauguration with our upcoming president, and it's just a time that we all need to really rise to the occasion and, make people power count. There's going to be lots of different issues coming up over the next 4 years, and we're going to need everybody on board. We need to become activists. And one thing that I like to ask people to remember during this time, these are, of course, not my words, but the words that have been read to me many, many times over the years. And they have a lot of meaning to me, and I really want to share them with all of you. And it is these: God, grant me the sincerity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And there's a lot of things that we can change. We can't change who our president-elect is going to be, but we can certainly stand up against tyranny, against prejudice, against anger, against hatred. We can't allow these things to overpower our reality. We need freedom in this country. This country is based on freedom for all. That's freedom of religion, freedom of sexual orientation, freedom of speech. Freedom, freedom, freedom. And we need to protect that, and we need everybody to stand up for what they believe in and what is important. So, I know right now there's petitions always on my website. Right now there's one to try to prevent the Bayer-Monsanto merger. If Monsanto and Bayer really merge, they are going to be a huge, huge conglomerate that's going to have control of our food system. They control our food, the seeds, all the pesticides, the glyphosate, the bee killing pesticide that Bayer puts out. I mean, it's just really horrible. And so please sign that petition. And, this is also a wonderful time of year where we think about giving. Think about giving to organizations that you care about. There's so many: Food and Water Watch, Slow Food USA, the Sierra Club, Environmental Defense Fund, so many that really need our support. The River Fund New York, which is the organization that I feed the homeless with, Food Democracy Now. The list just goes on and on and on. But you want to check and make sure that the organizations that you are giving to are really legit and use the majority of the money that you give them towards the issues you care about. Some organizations like the American, you know, like Cancer Association or, you know, all those, you know, many of the different health ones, I really don't give to because, one, I don't think they're on the right track trying to find a cure. Or, the, you know, we know through diet that we can prevent a lot of the cancers and the chronic diseases. And they're just not going up that tree because people can't make money with it. They're, you know, going and looking for more pharmaceuticals. And that is one thing I don't think we need is more pharmaceuticals. So we need to really improve everybody's diet and get people on board and really know the companies that you're going to donate to, know where they spend their money, know whether, you know, 70% of it goes to administrative bull or whether they actually are using just a small portion towards the administration of running the organization and that most of it goes to the issue that you think you're donating to. So do check that out before you give. But I want to share with all of you a recipe. In the cold weather, this is, you know, the time we start thinking about soups. And the Long Island cheese pumpkin is a pumpkin that has been entered into the Ark of Taste. And what that is, it preserves foods that are in threat of extinction, meaning that they're not grown a lot. They're heirloom varieties. They're varieties that have been forgotten about. And if people aren't planting them and eating them, they will no longer exist. So when Slow Food becomes aware of a product or a food that one of their constituents says is losing popularity and is going to become extinct, they rally behind and try to make people aware of it. So the Long Island cheese pumpkin is one of those right here on Long Island. They're beautiful, like tan-looking pumpkins with really distinct ridges in them. They're beautiful. I have a picture on my website with this recipe. So anyway, this is the Long Island cheese pumpkin. Of course, it will work with another pumpkin or other squashes like butternut squash or kombucha. But anyway, so I used one large Long Island cheese pumpkin cut in half. This, I was making this for a slow food event, so it makes about 42 cups, depending on how hungry, depends on how many people it will feed, but it makes about 42 cups of soup. So I started with 12 cups of water, 4 cups of pumpkin juice, which you'll get automatically when you roast the pumpkin. It's what comes off of the pumpkin when you're roasting it. And you're going to save that and use that in the soup as well because it has so much flavor. 2 tablespoons of coconut oil, 1 tablespoon of minced garlic, 8 tablespoons of fresh minced ginger, 2 teaspoons of cinnamon, 2 tablespoons of cardamom, 1 tablespoon of coriander, 6 teaspoons of salt, 2 onions chopped, 4 stalks celery chopped, 5 potatoes cut into chunks, 2 cans of coconut milk, 6 tablespoons of maple syrup, and then I garnished the top with pumpkin seeds. And that just added a nice little crunch to the first bite. Anyway, you're going to lay out the pumpkin, cut side down on an oiled roasting pan. But, of course, you first have to cut it in half. You have to scoop out the seeds. I save the seeds, of course, so that I can plant them. I have way more seeds than I can ever plant. So if you are listening to this show and you would like to grow this pumpkin, send me an email and I'd be happy to send you some seeds for free just to have you growing these pumpkins. But anyway, so then after you've scooped out the seeds, you're going to lay the pumpkin cut side down on an oiled roasting pan that I lined with some parchment paper. And you're going to bake it at 375 for about an hour. Really until the pumpkin is soft. And again, if you're using squashes, the cooking time will vary. But you want to be able to, you should be able to touch it and feel that it's soft or pierce it with a fork. And you're going to reserve the pumpkin juice that comes out of that pumpkin when you're roasting it and set that aside. And I had about 4 cups when I did that. Meanwhile, in a large stock pot while the pumpkin's roasting, I sauteed the onion in some coconut oil with celery, ginger, and garlic. Then I added all the spices and I lightly toasted them for a couple of minutes. And when the pumpkin was ready, I scraped out all the pulp, leaving the skin behind, and I added the pulp to the stock pot. And then I added the 12 cups of water and the 4 cups of pumpkin juice to the stock pot. And the pumpkin should be covered with liquid at that point. If it's not, you can add a little bit more water. You actually want to cover the pumpkin by about 3 inches. And then you're going to bring that liquid to a boil. You're going to add the potatoes and let that simmer for about 30 minutes. You can remove it from the heat, and with an immersion stick, you're going to puree the soup until it's smooth. If you don't have an immersion stick, you can use a Vitamix or a blender or a Cuisinart, whatever you like to use, to puree your soup. You're going to return it to the stove. You're going to add the coconut milk. And if the soup's too thick, you can add a little bit more water, add the maple syrup, and then taste it and adjust the spices according to what you like. Some people like a little bit more cardamom. Some people like it a little sweeter. You can add a little bit more maple syrup. And I also like to encourage people to be flexible in the kitchen. Okay, I have had feedback from people saying, you know, my recipes have too many ingredients. And just know that you don't need to use all those ingredients. I just like to give things deeper flavor, and sometimes I find I get that from mixing different spices together to create layers of flavoring, kind of an umami type of effect. You can also do that with a little miso. You could put a little miso in this, and that would help as well. But feel free to experiment and play around with things. And if you don't have something, leave it out. If you have something that you'd like to add to it, add to it. Don't be afraid to experiment. Think of yourself as an artist, and you're going into the kitchen, and that's your studio. And all the spices and the herbs and everything, those are your colors and your palettes. And you just go for it and have fun and create. And, you know, I talk about this a lot. We all have to get back into the kitchen and get cooking. When we cook, we not only are feeding ourselves and have transparency with our food. We know where our food comes from if we've purchased it. But when we cook food, we are actually imbuing the food with our love and healing powers. And I truly believe that. When you have a cup of soup that you've made at home, it's a very different thing than going out and buying a cup of soup. So join me in the kitchen. If you have questions, I'm happy to answer them. And enjoy the soup. And, of course, give me feedback. I always love to hear from all of you. And now it's my pleasure to introduce my guest, Robin Raven. She's the author of Santa's First Vegan Christmas. And she's from Alabama, and she grew up in a small town called Saraland. And she really found that her small town inspired her to write this book. And she, as an adult, she moved to Los Angeles, and now she's living in New York. And she has a BFA from the School of Visual Arts. And she does a lot of writing. She's been writing for USA Today, The Veg News, Malibu Times, The Huffington Post. And this is her first book. So I'm thrilled to introduce her to all of you. Robin, are you with me?
Hi, yes. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Great. Great. So what inspired you to write Santa's First Vegan Christmas?
Well, you know, I'm a huge Christmas enthusiast. I love all things to do with the holidays. And one year I was watching a lot of holiday movies, and I started to look at a lot of Christmas art. And I noticed there was this casual violence within the fictional Santa world that was kind of accepted without question. An example of this would be in many old like paintings and illustrations of Santa, he's carrying a whip. And a lot of those paintings show the whip in midair about to strike the reindeer. And I feel like that's kind of in contradiction of the way we really perceive Santa, which is like the ultimate good guy. And sadly, that's how horses are still treated today. So I saw the parallel with the real world way animals are treated and the way that the reindeer were treated in the story. And I was just taken aback by the casual violence in it. And so it made me just think about that, and it also reminded me of instances in my own life where I'd encountered injustice. And so the character of Dana was born, and Dana the reindeer She's the main character of the book. She's a fun character, and she has her quirks, and she stands up for herself and others. And so when the concept of that character came to me, I felt the strong need to tell the story.
Mm-hmm. And are you a vegan?
I am, yes.
You are. And what inspired you to become a vegan?
Well, I became a vegetarian when I was a kid because of my love for animals. And so that's what it was all about for me. And then more recently, I became a complete vegan. And I'm very happy that I did. I'm going to be this way for life.
Mm-hmm. And how long has it been for you?
I'm sorry?
How long have you been a vegan now?
For about a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Good. And who is the audience that you are writing for? Are you writing for the parents? Are you writing for the children?
You know, I really hope it appeals for all ages. It's really warmed my heart to hear families embracing the story. I was so touched when someone told me that it would now be a Christmas Eve tradition to read it with their family. I found that really humbling and exciting.
Uh-huh. And what other kind of feedback have you received from the book?
Well, just yesterday, Alicia Silverstone shared the book on Facebook and Twitter. That was enormously humbling and exciting. And we received wonderful blurbs. And the feedback that families are really enjoying it together is really exciting.
Uh-huh. How do you hope the book affects people? Are you hoping that it might make more people think about becoming vegan?
Yes, that is something I would love. And I hope they see Dana as kind of an inspiring character. As she says in the book, we can all be more kind. And I hope that people are inspired to start with themselves to help make the world a more peaceful, kinder place. That's what I'm trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, the book's not that long, so it's really very accessible for everybody. I was wondering if you had it with you, if you wanted to read it.
Oh, sure. One moment.
Would you be interested in doing that?
Oh, yes.
I thought it was really sweet. Yes. I read it, you know, there was that that link to someone was reading it, and it was just really very sweet. And so I thought I could just have you read it.
Sure, I'd be happy to. I'll start right now. Okay. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and in Arctic places, reindeer were playing, enjoying their races. Their tundra was blanketed with new fallen snow, as reindeer were laughing, dancing in a row. The youngest reindeer were running around, calves outrun men by leaps and bounds. No humans could be found in this serene paradise, so the reindeer frolicked, kicking up the ice. Ding, ding, sounded bells from out of the blue, startling Dana, a calf whose courage soon grew. Away the reindeer ran to protect one another. Yet Dana was left behind as she rushed to help her brother. Santa appeared and he searched far and wide. He was looking for new friends to join his yearly ride. As he gazed at the tundra, what did his wondering eyes find there? Sweet little Dana, the most beautiful reindeer. He went right to his work, whistling for her to come near. Dana wasn't to be fooled, of that she made clear. Look over there, Dana said as away she whirled. With that, she knew she was the most clever girl. Oh, how brave and what trouble she was destined to stir. She tossed away the harness Santa had intended for her. Santa huffed and he puffed till he was red in the face. All right, you, he said. I can't keep up this pace. I've got presents to deliver, and I need some help now. If you don't do it, who will? Your cousin the cow? There's a better way, Dana said with a slow smile. I know you're good at heart. Now please listen a while. Santa, look. I know you meant no harm. You're just going along with the cultural norm. The horses pulling carriages, reindeers pulling sleigh, it's all got to end, and I mean starting today. How things are, they're not always right. Think how you would feel if this were your plight. It just isn't nice. Dana looked him in the eye, then glanced away as Santa nodded and sighed. Santa imagined the uncomfortable harness. With a solemn nod, he saw the truth. unvarnished. He looked at Dana as she walked in his direction. She nuzzled his hand, and he smiled at the pure connection. Dana whispered, "Don't be sad. We can all be more kind." Santa nodded. So many thoughts were new to his mind. "It's not too late to change," Santa spoke to the phone. "I can still make everything right before dawn." "All earthlings should be respected," Santa announced. His gleeful awakening made him twist, turn, and bounce. Santa was excited about what he now believed, and he left the reindeer on the tundra completely free. Dana helped Santa create a shiny new sleigh, one powered on fun, love, and star rays. Along with presents for every girl and boy, they prepared to give out a new kind of joy. Santa danced into houses all over the world that night. He set about his new work, making wrong things right. For starters, he set all the caged birds free, then helped all the trapped fish escape to the sea. Dana rode in the sleigh and helped rescue new friends. Newly freed horses danced in the wind. Chained dogs were set free. They ran to Santa's embrace. Needy children were saved at the same rapid pace. Santa and Dana worked together in the lovely moonlight. There was much to accomplish on this magical night. They left food for the hungry, money for the poor, leaving enough for all till they couldn't ask for more. They didn't stop there. With deeds to do and presents to carry, cows, pigs, and chickens were moved to sanctuaries. So were rabbits, rats, and all beings in need. Santa Claus was proud of his many good deeds. When the world awoke on Christmas Day, Santa and Dana were flying over Mobile Bay. The children cheered and shouted their names, and Santa knew things would never be the same. People tried less taking and a lot more giving. They became happier with this new way of living. They realized all species need to be protected, and sentient beings must be respected. Santa was happier than ever that Christmas day. The peace in his heart was there to stay. Dana became a legend in her very own time. She was kinder than ever in the midst of her prime. Animals from all over gathered at the North Pole beacon. They rejoiced and sang carols of peace, love, and freedom. Dana's family joined Santa and Mrs. Claus as the day's kindness united hands, hooves, and paws.
Hi. That's really nice.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. I hope that more people buy your book and share it. It has a really nice message. And, I think, the character Dana, is one that can really influence young kids. And when you, when you influence kids when they're young, that's one of the things, I don't know if you heard at the beginning, I feed the homeless. And I really encourage parents to come with their children, because I feel like when you start teaching kids when they're young about giving back, it becomes a lifelong way that they live. And it makes a difference in this world. We need more people doing that.
Absolutely. I completely agree. That's wonderful. The event that you had.
And as a Christmas enthusiast, what are your favorite holiday films?
A Very Brady Christmas is my all-time favorite Christmas movie. I also love It's a Wonderful Life. It's such a classic. And All I Want for Christmas from 1991. And Mom for Christmas, Riding in Cars with Boys, Elf. There's so many great Christmas movies. I love watching holiday films.
Really? Okay. So do you encourage kids, with the tradition of leaving cookies out for Santa? Most cookies have eggs in them. Do you encourage families, do you talk about it in your book? The book doesn't have any recipes or anything, does it?
It doesn't, but I would encourage families to leave out vegan cookies, and I hear Santa likes chilled almond and soy milk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there are a lot of alternatives that can still be really yummy and fun.
Uh-huh. Now, I mentioned earlier that you also write for, the Huffington Post and USA Today. Are you writing solely about veganism? What else are you writing about?
No, I write about a variety of topics. That does end up coming up in a lot of articles I happen to pitch and get assigned to write. But I write about a wide range of topics, really a little bit of everything. So I enjoy writing about all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. And do you cook quite a bit, or do you eat out more?
I tend to go for a lot of vegan convenience foods, which I should probably start cooking more whole foods, but I get so busy. But, you know, what's great is a lot of the vegan packaged foods are still very, a lot of them are healthy, like Amy's, a lot of natural ingredients and nutritious food. But definitely I want to start cooking more, so I'm going to look for some of your recipes.
Yeah, well, that's something that always surprises me. You know, I meet many vegans who are, there's many reasons that people become vegans. I mean, you clearly have become a vegan because of your love of animals, which is a beautiful thing. But people also need to become vegans because of health reasons and also what it does for the planet. But as I had mentioned earlier, when we cook for ourselves, we have control of the foods we eat. And we also have control of the foods we buy. And when we're buying foods that are made by commercial companies, we are donating money or giving money to a lot of the organizations and processes that you don't want to, like, I don't know who owns Amy's these days, but so many of the, even the natural foods companies have been bought by mega food corporations who, you know, infiltrate the organic standards board, and they push to weaken the organic standards, and, you know, and it's still an industrialized processed food. It's not something homemade. So you don't know where the food's coming from. You don't know if it's all organic. You don't know if it's GMO'd. You know, there's no, there's not transparency in our food system. Mm-hmm. And so the only way that you really know is if we really, you know, and I, you know, I'm not just talking to you, I'm talking to everybody out there, you know, to really pay attention where we spend our dollars. This week, you know, actually Tuesday night after feeding the homeless all day, I went to hear a presentation that was put on by two people that spent 3 weeks out at Standing Rock in North Dakota in solidarity with the Native Americans there who are fighting as water protectors. They're not really fighting. They're doing peaceful prayer protesting as water protectors because the pipeline, the North Dakota pipeline, is planned to go across the Missouri River, right upstream from where their water supply comes from. And millions of people are dependent, not just Native Americans, but millions of people are dependent on that water supply. And we all saw in the paper just last week, 300,000 people waiting online to buy water in Texas. And we all know about Flint, where people had to wait online to get water or get water delivered. It's just, you know, when we lose our water, we're really in trouble. And the expansion of pipelines across this country is just enormous. And it's all run by banks, and, you know, and banks, you know, and are in bed with pharmaceutical companies and the agritech businesses, and they're all connected. And so when we're buying food, so often, even if it's vegan food, it's being owned by these other corporations that are participating in this other negative stuff that we don't want to be sending money to. So it's just amazing when you pay attention or when you do some research and find out who are the companies that own a lot of the, you know, vegan products that we buy. And so the only way that we can really free ourselves from this is really knowing where we're getting our food from and cooking for ourselves. And so that's so often why I really encourage that and push that to all of my listeners. I went to a film last week, and it was a film on eating whole food plant-based diet. And it was ironic because I don't know the, you know, whether the cinema didn't realize it or whatever, but they allowed a vegan company to be selling cupcakes in the lobby before going into the movie. And I went right by them going, excuse me, why these cupcakes, they're vegan, but there's, you know, artificially colored sprinkles all over it. And I'm like, what are you doing here? And they said, oh, well, they're vegan. You know, people are vegan for different reasons. And I just had to stop and think. It's like, to me, there's no reason to be a vegan and eat artificially colored sprinkles. You know, just it's an oxymoron. And so anyway, so I just, you know, I come from not the other side. I mean, I'm not as strict a vegan probably as you are. I eat that way most of the time. But, you know, my concern is more the transparency of the food and who we're supporting when we buy into commercialized food production, you know, on all levels, not just the meat level, but on all levels. So it's, a, you know, it's something to think about for sure. So anyway, can you share with people how they connect with you on the web?
Absolutely. Facebook and Twitter is are the best social media places, and I'm Robin Raven is my username on both of those, and I have a website, robinraven.com.
Uh-huh. And is the Santa's First Vegan Christmas available in, like, Barnes & Noble and things like that?
It is. If it's not available at your local one, you special order it, and it's also available on Amazon and the Vegan Publishers website and Vegan Essentials. The PETA catalog has it, and many local bookstores. And if it's not already in your local bookstore, you can request it, and they can get it for you.
And what about any special, like some of your favorite vegan meals for kids? Do you have any special vegan meals that you would recommend, or you know, some of your favorites that kids might enjoy?
I think that kids will enjoy, like you can mix vegetables in with, you know, natural pastas, and they'll enjoy that. And don't have any offhand, but I think it's really, really a lot easier to eat vegan than you realize from the outset. And websites like PETA Kids and Friends of Animals, they have a lot of great kid-friendly recipes on them.
And where do you get most of your protein from?
You know, there's so much vegan protein in a wide variety of sources, vegetables and beans and tofu, to name just a few.
I know, you know, when I was raising my kids as vegetarians, we weren't vegan, but we were vegetarians, you know, I found that when they would have their friends over, it was really important that whatever I was feeding them looked similar. You know, kids eat with their eyes before they even get to tasting it. They won't, if they don't like the way it looks, they're not even going to taste it.
True.
So one of our favorites was like a tofu parmesan, and or tofu cutlets parmesan. It would look some, you know, similar to kids, you know, who like the chicken nuggets or the chicken parmesan. And, you know, I would bread the tofu in whole wheat breadcrumbs, and you can, you know, instead of egg, I recommend people mix a tablespoon of ground flax seeds with a tablespoon of water, or even a tablespoon of vinegar is a nice thing, and that's a great egg substitute. And then you can dip the tofu, you know, first you slice the tofu and you dry it in some paper towel, dip it into the flaxseed, and then dip it into breadcrumbs that you season with some garlic powder and some basil and oregano, so it has those Italian spices, maybe a little bit of thyme, salt, pepper. And then you saute it in some olive oil. Fry it up until it's golden brown on each side. Then you put your favorite tomato sauce on there, you know, an organic tomato sauce that has no sugar in it. And that's something you always have to look for, those added sugars that they're sticking into even things like tomato sauce, which you would not expect. And you put tomato sauce on there, and then you can put a vegan cheese, you know, and I've started making vegan cheeses, and the vegan cheeses I'm making are delicious, and they're great. But most of the commercial vegan cheeses that you buy, they're not something that I'm going to eat for flavor. I use them because of the look. So, you know, there's nice shredded soy cheese or rice cheese or almond cheese that, you know, is like a fake mozzarella that you can use and sprinkle just a little bit on top, just enough so that it melts and looks a little bit like mozzarella for the kids. And, you know, and like I said, you're not putting it on for the flavor. And some of them melt better than others, so you have to play around with ones that melt well. But they're, that's a great recipe and a great meal for kids. All kids love it. And so I wanted to share that with them because since we're this interview is more kid-focused with such a great book. And I have to tell you, I think the book is just really so sweet.
Thank you.
The idea that, you know, Santa can get around without the need of reindeers pulling. Because at first I thought it was just going to be, you know, he wasn't cracking the whip. But he's not even having them pull the wagon, you know. So, you know, that's, you know, a nice twist to it.
Thank you so much.
You know, wouldn't it be nice if we all, you know, if more energy was being gotten from solar and wind and we were investing in that as opposed to the oil and the gas and all that stuff that just adds to, you know, that whole cycle I was talking about of everything being connected to everything and adding, you know, pollution to the planet. And it's all just one big connected web that's just a mess. So, anyway, what else would you like to share with my listeners before we're out of time?
Well, I think it's so wonderful to be here with you. I really enjoyed being on your show. And, you know, what I hope is that we all really start taking action now. It's kind of a turning point in a lot of ways, and it's really important for us to make sure our voices are heard against all kinds of oppression. So I think it's important to speak up in whatever ways we can.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, the issue that I was talking about with the North Dakota pipeline, you know, right now the protest is continuing to go on, you know, to protect the water up there. But one of the things that I found when I went to this presentation on Tuesday night was that even though President Obama and the Army Corps said that they cannot continue drilling, what happened is because of that big announcement, everyone thought, oh, great, the Native Americans won. So many people, thousands of people left. And, you know, of course, it's freezing cold up there, so many people wanted to leave. But they left, and what ended up happening is that there's only, you know, a few hundred people left up there, but the gas companies did not stop drilling did not stop digging to plant the pipeline. Turns out, you know, it's cheaper for them to pay $50,000 a day in a fine than it is for them to stop their production, knowing full well that when the next administration gets in, chances are they're going to be able to just start right up again. So rather than stopping and then having to start again, they're just sucking up and paying the fine, and it is continuing to go on. So as much as we would like to think that the Native Americans won and that the pipeline is going to be rerouted, that's not what's happening. And, you know, as people dig more, I found that the oil that they are, the crude oil that they are trucking across the country through all these hundreds of pipelines that are all over the place, and all these pipelines do leak, that the reality is it's not even oil that is being consumed in this country. The majority of the oil that is being trucked across the country is for export, purely for the profit of the oil companies. And so when we, you know, we're all at risk of our water being contaminated by leaking oil pipes, and yet we're not even taking this risk for our own oil and our own energy. We're taking this risk for the oil companies to be able to export this oil for their own profit. And people don't even realize that. It's just, you know, such a negative, bad thing. And, you know, with the new administration coming in, you know, I'm just really calling out to everybody listening to take a stand and to really, you know, put that extra bit of time in to research things, to find out who's behind it, who's profiting from it. You know, I always say if you follow the money, you can get to the truth, because people don't like to do things for free. I mean, there would be more money being invested in solar and wind if they could figure out who's going to make the money. You know, there'd be more energy put into keeping all of us healthy by eating more plant-based foods if somebody could make money on it, other than the farmers. You know, but the pharmaceutical companies, the insurance companies, the hospitals, the doctors, they all profit from us being sick. So there's not the incentive, you know, money incentivizes things, and there's not the incentive to get us all healthier, you know. And, you know, that's why, you know, when I meet people that are eating a vegan diet, because I'm a vegan wannabe. I'm not 100% vegan. I eat that way mostly because I think it's the healthiest way, and I think it's healthiest not just for my body, but it's also healthy for the planet. And then I feel like I'm not participating in all these negative things that I'm talking about. But when people are vegan purely for, you know, cruelty to animals, which, again, is a very valid reason to be vegan, but they're not vegan because they are caring for their own body, they're being cruel to their bodies. You know, to put artificial coloring and artificial dye into your body is not being kind to it, you know. Be eating a lot of sugar is not kind to it. And so, you know, especially I know a lot of, you know, parents that are vegan because, you know, their kids care about animals, and that's how they can get their kids on board, is by, you know, talking about Bambi and, you know, we don't want to kill Bambi and all that kind of thing. You know, kids will go for it. And, you know, it's easier to get them when they're young, of course, than when they're older. But, you know, we need to really be teaching them about taking care of their bodies, and that they're doing it not just because they don't want to be cruel to animals, but they're doing it because they want to be nice to themselves. You know, it's just a different spin on it. And I think it's one that's just so necessary for everybody who's thinking about that.
Yeah, I think it's nice to have vegan alternatives to everything, though, even sweets and in moderation. I think vegans can enjoy a little bit of everything, but just plant-based.
And you can. I have some great vegan, delicious cookie recipes, you know, I think, you know, and chocolate chip recipes, you know. I'm not saying, you know, you should deprive your child of sugar all the time, but you do want to give them sugar that's, you know, organic sugar, and give it to them less, and give it to them not as often. And, you know, even Cookie Monster, I'm happy to say, is no longer, you know, cookies, more and more cookies, how it was when my kids were babies. You know, now Cookie Monster has some restraint. He's like, cookies, sometime food, not every time food, you know, and trying to teach kids that, you know, cookies are a sometime food, not an everyday food. But vegetables and healthy things are everyday foods. And so they're just making a distinction, which I think is really important, really important to do. But anyway, Robin, it was a real pleasure to have you on the show. I want to thank you for joining us. And everyone out there, I want to thank you for joining us. And I wish you all a really, really happy, joyous, and healthy holiday. Please consider giving to some of the organizations I mentioned earlier during this time of year. There's so many organizations out there doing things, especially, you know, in light of this book. You can give to different farm sanctuaries. There's the Woodstock Farm Sanctuary up in Woodstock, New York. There's many different I think every state probably has some sort of farm sanctuary where animals are taken to live out the rest of their life in peace and a place where they're allowed to be the animal that they are and live within nature. And it's just a beautiful thing. So think about giving to some farm sanctuaries. Give to the Environmental Working Group. They're a great, great organization. Cornucopia is a great organization. Cornucopia, by the way, is coming out with a guide right after the new year, a guide on rating organic dairies. Both Cornucopia and the Environmental Working Group are some of my favorite organizations because they are really educating consumers. They come up with different graphs and lists of people doing it right. You know, Environmental Working Group, you know, in summer I always share their sunscreen review with people because there's so many different levels of sunscreen. You know, their Dirty Dozen list and their Clean 15 list of the most heavily sprayed produce and which ones are not as important to buy in organic and which ones are most important to buy organic. But the Cornucopia is now coming out with one where they're rating all of the organic dairies that are out there. Because, again, organic dairy, you think, oh, I'm buying organic. But all organic dairies are not the same. There's many organic dairies that are being run by these mega corporations, and they are not doing any better job, really, than conventional factory farms. I mean, yes, they might not be giving them antibiotics and hormones, and yes, that is an improvement. But they're still living in the horrible factory farm conditions of a regular conventional dairy farm, where there's hundreds of them packed into the cow houses, and you know, they go on the same slaughtering line that a conventional cow goes on. They're fed grain. They are not given access to grass and to pasture. And so it's not much of an improvement. And so I'm really anxiously awaiting this new Cornucopia list in 2017. And of course, I'll share that with all of you as soon as it comes out on my website. So again, if you don't get my weekly newsletter, you can sign up for it at iegreen.com. You can always send me an email at bhavani@iegreen.com. And I, again, wish you all a really joyous and happy and healthy holiday. And next week, we will be taking off for the holiday, but I will be replaying one of my favorite shows. Lisa Lavart is a photographer and artist, and she came out with a book called Goddess on Earth. And she went around interviewing different women who are really changing their local communities in a really positive way. And it's a wonderful book, and I just thought with the Women's March on Washington coming up and the wonderful feminist energy that we all need to support, that this would be a great show to share with you again. So anyway, have a great holiday. Happy New Year to all of you, and I'll see you all again in January. Bye for now.